This is the seventh chapter of part 4 poetic forms. Name of the chapter, the epic. The epic is a long narrative in verse dealing with the extraordinary deeds of the protagonist represented as a towering personality along with an equal opponent in stature. It is composed in a ceremonious grand style. The epic is an outgrowth of traditional storytelling. The aim of an epic poet is not to create a story, but to write an epic out of a famous pre-existing story. Radical changes are not desirable in the epic, because generally the story is already known to the reader. There are two types of epic. Number one, the epic of growth or the primitive epic. Number two, the epic of art or literary epic. The epic of growth. The epic of growth is the product of the folk tales which were orally transmitted from one generation to another for the sake of entertainment. It is not the creation of a single personality, but the stories existed in fragments right from the ancient times, have been collected by some poet who gave the form of an epic. Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, and in the Anglo-Saxon, Beowulf are the examples of the epic of growth. It is fresh, spontaneous, racy, simple, impersonal, direct, and frequently garrulous. Generally, the epic of growth deals with the same kind of subject matter. Its subject matter is in Homeric phase, the deeds of heroes, and reflects the early stage of civilization. The literary epic. The literary epic is an conscious effort of the modern poet to write in close imitation of the primitive epic. It is a work of an individual poet. It is learned, antiquarian, bookish, imitative, and a production of skill. Virgil's Aeneid, Tasso's Jerusalem Liberata, Spenser's Faerie Queen, and Milton's Paradise Lost are literary epics. They are written not for entertainment, but for the reading of cultured people, reflecting the temperament of the poet. Characteristics of the epic. Number one, the protagonist is generally a legendary hero or national figure who performs superhuman exploits in battle or in marvelous voyages. He either represents the whole nation, as in Virgil's Aeneid, A-E-N-E-I-D, or the human race itself, as in Milton's Paradise Lost. In dimension and bulk, the hero is a powerful personality among his men. He is gifted with unique physical prowess, selflessness, and moral stature. Number two, the supernatural agency plays a very vital role in the development of the story. The gods or other machinery take an interest or active part or intervene in the action of the epic. Spenser's Faerie Queen and Milton's Paradise Lost are fraught with supernatural elements. Number 3. The epic abounds in thrilling episodes, wonderful adventures, catalogues of warriors, accounts of tournaments, conferences and assemblies, battles and duels, and hazardous journeys to the underworld. In Milton's Paradise Lost, all the fallen angels in hell assemble together in pandemonium to form a new strategy. Satan delivers a long speech before them and makes his journey from hell to earth and back. Warfare is usually not incidental but central to the epic mode of life. Number 4. The epic poet introduces epic simile or Homeric simile to compare one complex action or thing or quality with another. For example, in Paradise Lost, the shield of the Satan hung on his shoulders looks like the moon. Number 5. The setting of the epic is large and comprehensive. The theme is serious, lofty, sublime. The scope of the Paradise Lost is cosmic because it takes place on earth, in heaven, and in hell. Number 6. There is always a single organic action in any epic. Though the poet intrudes innumerable episodes and makes digressions, yet they are relevant to the main action. Following the Aristotelian theory, it has the beginning, the middle, and the end. Number 7. There are long set speeches in the epic, often occupying considerable part of the poem and reflecting the temperaments of the characters. Number 8. The epic is presented in uniform lines, not broken into stanzas. Number 9. To achieve grandeur, various stylistic devices are used in the epic. Personifications, Latinisms, stock epithets, allusions, and references, Latin or inverted construction, paraphrases, circumlocutions, rich diction, etc. Number 10. The epic has moral purpose, though it is not present in the primitive epics. Homer's epics are imbued with the spirit of patriotism and national pride and glory. But the Italian poet Tasso first introduces moral and didactic elements in Jerusalem Liberata. The best example is Milton's epic, which is to justify the ways of God to men. Number 11. The epic has cultivated and adopted certain conventions. 1. The epic is generally divided into 12 books. Though Iliad and Odyssey are written in 24 books each, yet it was Virgil who first practiced the reduced number in his Aeneid. Milton also raised to 12 books from the original 10. 2. The poet invokes the spirit to fill inspiration and wisdom and courage in him to carry on the epic. This prayer is called invocation. In Paradise Lost, Milton prays to the heavenly muse to illumine what is dark in him. 3. The poet states the theme or subject matter at the very outset of the epic, which is technically called proposition. Milton unfolds his theme to justify the ways of God to men in the very beginning. Number 4. The poet commences the story in medias res, that is, in the middle of the things, at the crucial moment of the story. Paradise Lost opens with the fallen angels in hell with their leader, Satan, and flock together as to how to take a revenge on God. This chapter is now over. Thank you.